Now, President Biden announced last week that he would issue pardons for all past federal convictions for simple marijuana possession. He's urging governors to do the same for possession convictions at the state level.
No one should be in jail just for using or possessing marijuana. It's already legal in many states, and criminal records for marijuana possession have led to needless barriers to employment, to housing, to educational opportunities. And that's before you address the racial disparities around who suffers the consequences.
The White House estimates the pardons would include around 6,500 people. Biden is also calling on the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Attorney General to review how marijuana is classified under federal law. Still a long way from decriminalization or legalization, but policy experts say it's a significant shift. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support these pardons? Do you want to see similar things happen here in Wisconsin for marijuana possession? Do you want to see decriminalization, legalization at the federal level or here in the state? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. John Hudak is Deputy Director of the Center for Effective Public Management and Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. He's the author of the book Marijuana, A Short History. John, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be back.
How big a shift do you see this announcement when it comes to how presidents of the United States are talking about marijuana policy?
Well, I think it's important to know who the president is who's doing this. Joe Biden spent a large part of his Senate career as a drug warrior, someone helping to harden the nation's drug laws, and that he is taking a step which is the most progressive step around cannabis policy that any president has taken in American history, is meaningful. It shows the amount of change that has happened in this country, particularly over the past 10 to 15 years. If you could get an individual like Joe Biden to be doing something like this as president, it shows that shift.
Looking at the specific policy items here, 6,500 people or so issued pardons under this announcement. This only people under a federal charge under federal law. I assume this will include people who aren't currently incarcerated. It will strike things from the record. How significant are those pardons themselves?
The pardons themselves are meaningful. For those 6,500 individuals, this essentially means that under the law, their conviction has gone away, and that's an important step. But more can be done. Pardons are not expungement. These crimes, these criminal convictions can still pop up on background checks, and this is just a first baby step in that direction. But it was also important for the president to do that second step that you mentioned, which was to encourage governors to follow suit. Most of the crimes for marijuana possession are charged at the state level. And we're talking about 500,000 arrests a year for cannabis-related crimes. More than 90% of them are for cannabis possession. And so the president can only do so much. His pardon power only reaches federal law. It does not extend to state law. And having governors follow his lead could have much more significant impact.
You've written about the impact of people being charged for marijuana possession having a very stark racial divide. What do you see?
Yeah, the data don't lie on this. We know that Black Americans are over three times more likely than white Americans to be arrested for cannabis charges. We know that those numbers still sustain at slightly lower disparity rates, but still sustain even in states that have legalized cannabis. The remaining crimes that are charged still have racial disparities. And we also know from research that at every step of the criminal justice system, Black and brown Americans are treated more harshly than our white Americans. So in the decision to arrest, the decision to prosecute, in terms of sentences when convictions happen, the rate at which convictions happen, this all disproportionately impacts people of color. And that is driven in large part because of the design of the drug war to be exactly that, to have racial disparities and to punish people of color at higher rates.
The other part of the president's announcement had to do with the classification, the schedule for marijuana as a drug. Where is it currently and what does that mean?
So the rescheduling process in federal drug laws is one that is clearly spelled out in the Controlled Substances Act, which is the main driving central law for drug policy in our country. And what it does is it spells out a process that the Attorney General and the Secretary of Health and Human Services will investigate and study this issue, and they will have researchers within both of those departments put together reports and make recommendations about whether cannabis is properly scheduled as a Schedule I substance, which it is now, which makes it illegal in all circumstances under federal law, with the exception of federally approved research, or whether it should move to another one of the schedules, 2 through 5, which are lower levels of control for cannabis, or they can make the determination that cannabis should be removed from the schedules altogether. And while I think that's very unlikely from this process, the discretion is there for quite a bit of a movement on or off the schedules.
We're talking about President Biden's federal marijuana policy, some announcements last week, pardons, and as we were just talking about, possible changing of the classification of marijuana. John Hudak stays with us from the Brookings Institution, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want the federal government to change the legal classification of marijuana to make it less illegal, to make it legal straight up? Would you support decriminalization or full legalization at the federal level? Here in Wisconsin, is this a voting issue for you? Stark differences between the candidates for governor, for example. Will you vote for someone based in part on their stance on marijuana? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with John Hudak, Deputy Director of the Center for Effective Public Management, Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. He's written about marijuana policy, and he's with us today to talk about the impact of President Biden's federal pardons for marijuana possession, also encouraging governors to do the same, how the administration could shift policy on the drug, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Lee is with us in Madison. Lee, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I think Snoop Dogg summarized it up about the best. He said, put a bunch of brothers in a room with some weed in the air, and they're all gonna laugh and have a good time, or put four of them in a room with a bottle of alcohol, and somebody's probably gonna die. You know, I don't know how much more logic you could put it into.
Lee, I gotcha, John. The alcohol versus marijuana contrast. Why is alcohol legal and regulated as it is versus marijuana?
There's certainly historical traditions about why cannabis was put on the federal schedules and why alcohol was not. Alcohol was a pretty booming business in 1970, as it is today, and those business interests made sure that alcohol was protected from that type of scheduling in a way that cannabis was not. But for a lot of Americans, when they're thinking about the choice over whether to legalize cannabis or not at the ballot box, a lot of them make a pretty similar argument that Lee did, and that is that alcohol is much more dangerous in this country than cannabis is, or at least the perception is that. And if we can have one legal, we should be able to have both legal. And that's a process a lot of Americans think through when they consider these ballot initiatives in their states.
We'll go to Scott now in De Pere. Scott, hi.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, this is kind of related to the last caller. It is a comparison again to alcohol. As a father of teenagers, I would much rather my kids smoke marijuana and go driving than drink alcohol and go driving. You don't hear about fatalities from marijuana use and then going out and driving like you do about alcohol. The other thing is that you hear people say a lot that marijuana is a gateway drug. And I was just wondering if you're expert on the panel has statistics that support or,
I gotcha. Scott, as a fellow parent, I would also discourage a smoking pot and driving. I want to have that out there. But John, to his second point, the gateway drug concept.
Yeah, and I too will chip in there and say, impaired driving is impaired driving, and we should always avoid it at any cost. But in terms of the gateway effect, this is a notion that was conceived over the course of decades that has largely been disproven. The idea that there is something chemical in cannabis that will naturally push or graduate someone to a harder drug is really a myth. There are a lot of people in this country who have used cannabis during their lifetime. Tens of millions of people have. And very, very, very few of them end up graduating to harder substances. The reality of the gateway effect tends to come from the illicit market, from a dealer who earns a much better profit margin off of harder drugs. And it is in the interest of that dealer to graduate someone from cannabis to harder drugs. It's not cannabis that's doing it as much as it is an illicit cannabis dealer.
Thanks for that call, Scott. Another Scott joins us calling from on the road. Scott, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Scott?
Well, I just want to say that it is long, long past due that we reform our marijuana laws. 30-plus years ago, I was convicted of intent to deliver marijuana. I'm a convicted felon 30 years on. Never had any other problems with the law. Never had any problems with the law except for this. My attorney told me, plead no contest. It's nobody cares about marijuana. It'll be legal any day. That was over 30 years ago.
Scott, thanks a lot for the call. John, a lot of people out there potentially like Scott carrying that felony conviction on the record from as long as 30 years ago.
Absolutely. Scott's story is not an original one, unfortunately. And those types of crimes were, you know, a lot of cannabis crimes, even simple possession in some states, were felonies up until very recently. And so the opportunities that are lost for individuals who have low-level cannabis offenses are significant. Their educational opportunities, housing opportunities, other economic opportunities like employment, much of what the president said the other day in his announcement. And states are recognizing that those are serious problems, and restorative justice programs are increasingly being attached to legalization efforts in the states so that individuals like Scott and others who have been harmed by the war on drugs will see some of that go away. Now, granted, it doesn't change the history of lost opportunities, but if it can put people on the right path in the future to give them better opportunities, it's something that a lot of Americans want and a lot of states are starting to do.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. We're talking to John Hudak from the Brookings Institution about marijuana policy and politics. And John, we've seen some other states, we've talked about this in the past, where you've seen bipartisan efforts or sometimes a bipartisan support for referenda that legalize marijuana medically or recreationally. Then we have Wisconsin, a very strong contrast, support in polls, a slight majority of Republicans support legalization when you survey them. But in our race for governor, for example, we've got Democratic Governor Evers, who had proposed legalization in his last budget, rejected in the legislature by Republicans there. His challenger, Republican Tim Michaels, joined all of his primary opponents saying, nope, no legalization here. What do you make of that divide here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that divide, particularly among elected officials, is real. When you look at votes in the United States Congress, for instance, on full-scale legalization, most every Democrat is supporting that legislation, and very few Republicans are. That contrasts, as you said, pretty dramatically with what we know about everyday partisans, everyday Republicans, everyday Democrats, not ones who are holding elected office, but just regular voters. Majorities of both parties support cannabis reform, but what we're seeing is that most voters don't hold elected officials accountable simply because they disagree with them on cannabis. Most voters care about a litany of other issues ahead of cannabis, and as a result of that, these elected officials can have those divergent views. But a day will come where voters will get fed up with that, and supporting continued prohibition will be a losing political play, and you'll start to see that shift even among elected Republicans.
And speaking of a shift, you mentioned President Biden as Senator Biden, very much looking for more punitive drug laws. Now he's changed. Talk about the shift you've seen over the last couple few decades on marijuana.
So a few things have happened in the electorate over the past few decades when it comes to cannabis. One is that there's a generational replacement effect going on. So typically, the oldest Americans are the ones least supportive of legalization, and the youngest Americans in polling are the most supportive. And as older voters die off and as new voters turn 18 and are voting eligible, you're starting to see those kinds of shifts happening within the electorate in pretty rapid shifts as well. But it's not simply generational replacement, because as we follow cohorts of voters by age, the silent generation, the baby boomer generation, et cetera, we are seeing increases within those groups as well. So it's not just that new voters are changing the cannabis policy landscape, but people are changing their minds on cannabis policy.
Let's bring on one more caller. Chris is with us in Madison. Chris, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Chris?
So I have there's a couple of reasons. First of all, I just think that legalization federally just needs to happen, and states can, you know, choose how they want to do it, but they should not be able to block it. It's in this day and age, we have known medicinal and holistic uses for cannabis that, you know, from many, many, many years of its use in cancer patients and AIDS patients and et cetera. It's a plant. You can't tell me I can't have a plant. But you know, it's an entity of itself. It's not a medicinal. It's not a pharmaceutical. And so the ridiculousness of the scheduling, which is really kind of what drives a lot of the legalization, is, you know, very out of hand. And as they said before, a lot of it is just political and who lobbied best, you know, alcohol.
Chris, I gotcha. Just a minute or so left. John, your thoughts, Chris, talking about the medicinal uses there.
You know, Chris is, you know, verbalizing a worldview, a perspective on cannabis policy that I think has been a real driver in that public opinion change we were just discussing. A lot of people either use cannabis as medicine or know a friend or a family or a loved one who uses cannabis as medicine. And what they're seeing is that those individuals can have a normal life. They can get relief for their ailments. They are not out driving impaired, and that they are just the same person they were before they started using medical cannabis. And that, I think, is changing a lot of people's minds, because they're seeing firsthand that A, cannabis has benefits, and B, that cannabis doesn't have the types of challenges or the types of fear that the government instilled in people for decades about this substance. And because people are seeing it with their own eyes, it is also changing people's minds on the topic and with their decision whether or not to legalize at the ballot box.
Chris, thanks for the call. And John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's John Hudak, Deputy Director of the Center for Effective Public Management and Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. He's the author of the book, Marijuana, A Short History. He's with us today looking at a shift in federal marijuana policy from President Biden and where it could go from here at the national and state levels. Still time for you to share your thoughts. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page.